some John Oakes of this age.
The Spirit's fire. The Spirit's fire. All right, that's from our hike.
Ooh, nice.
Awesome.
On Monday.
Great picture.
God blessed us with some pretty good weather, considering it was supposed to be pouring rain. It was quite an adventure, I have to say. Quite an adventure. All right. So, oh, and that's just a picture on the way back to the trails. Beautiful. That's like, I'd make a poster, you know? All right, so we're in the book of Job, yes? And in the book of Job, we're asking some questions that I think every human being asks. Why is there suffering in the world? Which really begs an even greater question, whether God is good. And we notice that in view of the Christian belief anyway, that God is like super all omnipowerful, but also that God is loving, given the existence of things like cancer and, you know, earthquakes and things like that, you have to wonder, is it because God's not powerful or because he's not as loving maybe as we thought he was? So the book of Job then can be used to answer questions such as, why is there evil in the world if there is an all-powerful and loving God? By the way, what we saw last week is because God gives a choice, right? God, a God of love, gives a choice. In fact, you cannot make somebody love you. The Christian answer to why we exist is because God wanted to love us. So he wanted us to love him. And love gives a choice, right? That's why there's that pesky tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the garden. Because Adam and Eve needed to have a choice. And we read Exodus 36, verse 6 and 7. Actually, we read Exodus 20. But I kind of like the version in Exodus 34, verse 6 through 7, where we saw that the sin has consequences. And then when human beings rebel against God, rebel against his sovereignty, and sin, we bring suffering into the world. And generational sin is going to affect us. And that's a law, a moral law, about as avoidable as the law of gravity. So sin came into the world, and therefore evil, and therefore suffering. But we decided that not all suffering is because of sin. Right? In fact, everybody dies. Mm-hmm. And there are natural causes. So even if there was no sin, then elephants would still die and fish would still die. And I believe so would we as well. And we saw in Job 1 verse 12 that God's, basically Satan is in there in the throne room with God, which is really surprising. But we decided that probably it's because despite his rebellion, God loves Satan as well. Hard to imagine. That's the only interpretation I can have on that. And so Satan says, people don't really love you. It's just a zero-sum game. The only reason they're serving you is because you're giving them more stuff than I'm giving you. But if I gave them more stuff than you're giving them, then they would serve me instead. So God says, okay, Job, go for it. Go after Job. Let's see. We're going to find out. And that raised some good questions, like why would God let Satan go after Job, who was a righteous man? And we said maybe to show Satan that he's wrong, that we thought that possibility. Or we thought maybe just to test Job to find out if his faith was real. Or maybe to give Job an opportunity to prove to God and to himself that he's faithful. Another possibility is God allowed this to happen for our sake. In fact, if you go to James 5:11, which I'm not going to do right now because I have too much to cover today, basically James says, consider the perseverance of Job and learn from that and understand the mercy of God. All right, so that's kind of what we covered last week. Questions like, why do we suffer? And when we suffer, what ought we do about that? Well, Job is going to help us answer those questions. So we only got through verse 12 last week. We didn't get very far. So today we're in Job 1, verse 13. Let's go there. Okay, remember, in verse 12, the Lord said to Satan, "Very well then, everything he has is in your power, but on the man himself do not lay a finger." Basically, God says, you can take away from anything you want. You just can't attack him personally. Okay, great. So then one day, verse 13, when Job's sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house, a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing, the donkeys were grazing nearby, and the Sabaeans attacked and made off with them. They put the servants to the sword, and I'm the only one who has escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another messenger came in and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants, and I'm the only one who has escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, "The Chaldeans formed three raiding parties, swept down on your camels, and made off with them. They put the servants to the sword. I'm the only one left who has escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, yet another messenger. Man, when it rains, it pours, right? Another messenger came and said, "Your sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the older brother's house. When suddenly a mighty wind swept in from the desert, struck the four corners of the house, it collapsed on them, and they're all dead. I'm the only one who's escaped to tell you." All right? Job's having a pretty bad day. Has anybody here had a day as bad as Job just had? No. I don't think so. Not that we're going to have a contest on who had the worst day. But basically, all of his possessions were taken. But they weren't his most prized possessions, were they? No. His children were. And God even allowed his children to be taken away. Would you be doubting God at this point?
Yes.
Would you be doubting God's goodness at this point? Would you be angry at God at this point? How does Satan tempt us? He goes after the things we care about the most sometimes. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes. And so he goes after Job's weak points. Satan thought this is sure to get Job. Well, if you know the story, we're going to find out it's actually not going to work. Because Satan is underestimating Job. But the question is Satan underestimating you? Or does he have your goat, as they say? So let's read verse 20 through 22, which is so encouraging, so encouraging. "At this, Job got up, he tore his robe, and he shaved his head. And he fell to the ground and worshipped and said, 'Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised.' And all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing." Right? By the way, later on, he is actually going to charge God with wrongdoing, just so you know. Okay. All right. So basically, Job had a horrendous tragedy fall on him, partly through natural causes, right? The fourth one. Well, the wind, yeah? And then partly through sin, essentially, where raiders come and attack and take his stuff. So what does Job do? He actually did two things. Number one, he went into mourning. And number two, he worshiped God. Okay? Number one, he went into mourning. And number two, he worshiped God. And I've studied Job a number of times, and I failed to notice at first that he went into what we call mourning. So I see Job's faithfulness here. That I noticed the first time I ever read Job. But what I think I missed the first, I don't know, 8 or 10 times I read the book of Job is that Job is going into mourning. He tore his robe. He's not happy. He's in deep anguish. Right? And he shaved his head, which for a Jew to shave their head, right, for us to shave our head, not too big a deal. But for Job, he wasn't a Jew, so technically he's not a Jew, but culturally, and for those people to shave their head, oh my goodness. Job was torn up. He went into mourning. You know, we Americans, we're terrible at mourning. Mm-hmm. We're terrible at it. And, you know, even in our churches, Jan and I went to a, I think I might have mentioned this already, went to a celebration of life for a good friend who died recently. And that's great, okay, celebrating his life. But his brother, I don't know how much, if he's really celebrating, it's kind of, you know, even Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, there's a time to weep and a time for joy. I don't think we're very good at mourning. I think other cultures are much better at it. You know, we see the stuff going on in the Middle East, and you see people just crying out in tears and shouting and screaming. And we Americans say, too emotional. They need to control their emotions. I think they're much better at it. In fact, in parts of the world, specifically in the Middle East, you can hire mourners. And they'll come to your house and wail and do all this stuff. And like, as Americans, we go, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. All right? That's the dumbest thing I ever heard, but actually, I think it's brilliant. Because it gives the people there permission to be really sad. And also angry. Alright? Yeah. Like I said, our culture is terrible at this. I can remember when my dad died, my mom didn't cry. She didn't cry. And she wanted to. You could tell she wanted to, but she didn't know how. That's the family I was raised in. In fact, at the service for my dad, I was the only one who cried. And I got up there and talking, I'm just crying, all that kind of stuff. My brothers and sisters were like, that's not an Oaks thing to do there. What's up? No, I don't think they did that, but in all this, Job did not sin. Notice, he's grieving. He's sad. He's upset. But that's not sin. Yeah. Okay? We need to allow people to be sad. I remember one of the, a friend of mine, her husband was leading our sister church in Orange County, and he died, and that was a huge thing. That was a huge thing. He'd been leading a church of like 400 or 500 members. And I was talking to her about this very subject, and he said, nobody's giving me permission to mourn. They're telling me that I need to, you know, kind of, not exactly get over it, but yeah, and to me that's tragic. In fact, farther on down in chapter 3, we're going to see Job really mourning, really mourning. All right, so let's go on to Job 2. It says 1 through 10. I'm going to read 1 through 8 first. On another day, the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. You know, Satan doesn't give up as easily as we wish. I mean, he's not done. He's not done tempting Job. Satan also came with them to present himself before him. And the Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" And Satan answered the Lord, "From roaming throughout the earth, going back and forth on it." You know, just messing up people's lives, trying to tempt people to rebel against you and telling them that you don't love them and putting, you know, temptations that are going to ultimately lead them to drug addiction and gambling addiction. Just the usual stuff that I do. It's just kind of going around patrolling my territory to make sure that my minions are just hanging in there with me. Okay? Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. And he still maintains his integrity. though you incited me against him to ruin him without any reason. Skin for skin, Satan replied. A man will give all he has for his own life. But now, stretch out your hand and strike his flesh and bones, and he will surely curse you to your face. The Lord said to Satan, surprisingly, very well then, he's in your hands, but you must spare his life. So you can mess him up, anything short of actually killing him. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and afflicted Job with painful sores from the soles of his feet to the crown of his head. Job took a piece of broken pottery and scraped himself with it as he sat among the ashes. Wow. Another bad day, another bad week, another bad life. And Satan says, skin for skin. Well, what's that mean? That's an idiom. That's just an expression. It's not what we say. Basically what it means, this is a saying the Jews had. It means something like this. A man that would exchange anything to save his skin. All right. In other words, he would give up any amount of property he had in order to save himself. There's a Turkish proverb, and Turkey is kind of close to Israel. The Turkish proverb which says, we would give our beard to save our head. And, you know, the beard, that's the Muslim thing. We would give our beard to save our head. Satan again thinks that Job's religion is about himself, not about God. So, you know, in the first episode, if you will, he hadn't gone after Job. So Satan's thinking, well, if I go after Job himself, all right, then he'll surely deny me. How would you be doing at this point? You're covered with sores from head to toe. You've lost all your possessions. Your children are dead. And your body is, you know, you have cancer. Or you have a chronic disease which will never, ever go away. But that's the situation for Job. Now let's see his response. His wife said to him in verse 9, are you still maintaining integrity? Curse God and die! Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot, Job's wife. Thanks a lot, wifey. You're really helping me out here. Okay. He replied, you're talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble? And all this, Job did not sin in what he said. And Job asks a really deep question. Are you going to accept good from God but not trouble? Are you meaning that God will send trouble into your life? Yeah. Yeah, he will. For a few different reasons. We already talked about some of them. Yeah, he will. Not he might. He will, actually. Now, I would say Job's wife is getting some pretty low scores right now. That's not a very good thing there. Basically, but on the other hand, she's what? Let's try to be a little bit, maybe give her a little bit of a break. Because she's seeing Job's lost everything. He has nothing he valued. It's all gone. And he's in the most extreme, incredible suffering. So maybe she's saying kind of like, you know, why don't you just let yourself go? I mean, we've seen people, we've heard of people, we've known of people who honestly, it'd almost be a blessing for them to die. So I don't know. I maybe we could give her possibly a little bit of room that maybe she's not as bad as she seems. Although when she says curse God, I'm not going to go along with that. Okay. But the question is, how are you going to be able to go through a time of deep loss, suffering, not getting into the school you want to get into, all right, having your girlfriend or boyfriend say, I don't want to go out with you anymore, all right, losing your job, getting a terminal illness, are those going to cause you to no longer trust God? Because what that means is you never trusted God in the first place. In all this, it says, Job did not sin. Proverbs 18:24. We're gonna do a negative one on Job's wife here. a negative one on Job's life. Proverbs 18:24. Because one of the things we're thinking about in this book, as we study this book, is how do I, as a friend of one who's going through great suffering, what do I do? In fact, there's almost as much, maybe as much in this book about how do we handle when other people are suffering as there is how do we handle when we're suffering. All right? So Proverbs 18:24, a little piece of advice here. One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there's a friend who sticks closer to it than a brother. So, do you have reliable friends? By the way, that's not on you. That's, you know, if you have an unreliable friend, that's not on you. It's on them. But where do you find those reliable friends? I was talking to a brother just this week, and he had been hanging out with reliable friends, and he foolishly spent a weekend where he spent the weekend with unreliable friends. Well, they're reliable, all right, to get him in trouble. And he's still struggling even today. But Job accepts trouble from God. In all this, he did not sin. So the question is, can we love a God we can't control, who seemingly leaves us at times? Can you love a God you cannot control? Psalm 77:19. Psalm 77:19. I'm telling you, sometime in your life, you're going to be in a place like this. Maybe not quite as bad as Job was in. One thing you need is reliable friends, for sure. But another thing you need is the ability to trust God. Psalm 77:19. All right, and here we see the psalmist just talking about what God had allowed to happen. It happens to be Asaph, not David. He says, "Your path led through the sea, your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen." You know, Asaph went through a period in his time when he couldn't see God. There's no clear evidence of God. And right now, when Job is sitting there, his children killed, all his possessions taken, and he's suffering extreme agony, he couldn't see God. And the question is, are you going to hold on to God in that kind of situation? All right, let's go on here. Let's read in Job chapter 3. So enter friends. Hopefully. Like I said, we're looking at a few things today, these 3 weeks. One, we're asking is God good? Intellectually, asking kind of the intellectual question, is God good? We're asking another question is, how about you? Are you going to rely on God when he doesn't seem so good? And number 3, what are you going to do as a friend of somebody going through something like that? So here we're going to see some friends. Job had some friends, all right? And that's going to be Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. Got it? So in Job 3, verse 11. Sorry, did I not say that? Job chapter 2, starting in verse 11. So in Job's 3 friends, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, heard all about the troubles that had come upon him. They set out from their homes. They met together by agreement to go and sympathize with him and to comfort him. When they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him. They began to weep aloud. They tore their robes. They sprinkled dust on their heads. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights. No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. All right, now let's pretend you never read the book of Job. Let's pretend you know nothing other than about Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar other than what you just saw. Hey, Gabe, what you just saw in this story. How would you rate Eliphaz, Zophar, and Bildad as friends?
difference.
They're amazing. They're incredible. They're the model. Friend, what are they not doing that we tend to do when somebody's suffering? Talking. And telling them the solution to their problem. Telling them how to fix their problem. Giving them unasked for advice. That's what we tend to do. But that's not what Bildad, Eliphaz, and Zophar did. You know, the shortest guy in the Bible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How short was he?
Bildad the Shuhite. Bildad the Shuhite. The Shuhite. Bildad the Shuhite. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's in my notes. Joke. Who's the shortest person in the Bible? Question mark. Bildad the Shuhite. All right. Yeah. How do we help those who are suffering? Grief and loss. I think we just hang out with them. And we cry with them. We get sad with them. And when they get angry, we even get angry with them. We experience the emotions they're experiencing. They sympathized. They comforted. Yes, they wept aloud with him. Later on, they're going to start talking, right? And as soon as they open their mouth, they're going to blow it big time. We say, oh, it's going to be okay. You know, somebody loses their boyfriend or girlfriend, or somebody gets kicked out of college, or somebody has a disease, or somebody loses their mom. We say, it's going to be okay. We say, are you going to get through this? You'll get through it. We say, God will use this for your benefit, or we'll quote Romans 8:28, all things work out for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. It's going to be good. This is going to, in the long run, this is going to be good for you that this happened. Worst possible thing to do is to quote that scripture at a time like that. Say, you could say, well, God is with you. All right, I could go with that one maybe. How about sitting, listening, sympathizing, and feeling what they're feeling? All right, so this brings us, so by the way, we're just finishing chapter 2, and we have, 30-something chapters to go, and we're going to cover that between, in the next week or so, so we'll see how we can do there. So, the rest of the book of Job is devoted to the question of suffering. So basically, the first two chapters, here's the situation. What happened to Job, all right? And then the next, 30 chapters in a row are all attempts to answer the question, so what do we do about that? So why do we suffer in any case? Well, last week we looked at three reasons that we suffer. Well, two and a half. One reason we suffer is because somebody else sinned, and the consequences of their sin comes on us. Think of a few examples of that? Yeah. Another reason we suffer is because we sinned. And we bring negative consequences on ourselves. Another reason we suffer is because it's a dangerous world. Right? There's weather, there's climatic things, and there's diseases, and the bottom line is life includes suffering, and we're gonna die. I want to look very briefly at some other reasons that God has allowed us to suffer. I'm going to make the argument that suffering is a gift from God. I want us to have a perspective on this. It'll help us. And the thing is, if you tell somebody who's going through extreme suffering this, at that time, it's not the good time to tell them that, all right? You tell them this before they go into that. All right, so one thing is, I believe without suffering, there's no joy. No suffering, no joy. I believe in this life, if we did not experience suffering, we also would not experience joy. When does your food taste awesome? When you're really hungry. When it is an incredible thing when you find a friend. When you're really lonely. David expressed it in Psalm 30, verse 5. Psalm 30, verse 5. We could go over there quickly. Psalm 30, verse 5. So I'm going to argue that, by the way, again, don't tell Job this right now. Don't tell Job right now that without suffering there's no joy, all right? Don't tell him that right now. But tell him before this happens, or maybe a few months after this happens, but don't tell them this right now. Psalm 30, verse 5, where it says, "For his anger lasts only a moment, and his favor lasts for a lifetime. Weeping may stay for the night, but rejoicing comes in the morning." Great rejoicing comes after great weeping, but don't blow off the great weeping. Okay, got it? Now, the world is kind of the other way around. In the world, is rejoicing at night and then weeping in the morning, but that's a whole other thing. There you go. Another reason I would argue that suffering is actually a gift of God is because if we don't suffer, we don't grow. You know what they say? No pain, no gain. All right? If you want to have a suffering-free life, then just sit on the couch all day long and become a wimpy, useless, ingrate, and not good person. James 1, 2 through 4. We're just going to read these quickly. If you don't get there, I'll just keep reading because I want to just get through this. But consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Another reason suffering is actually a good thing is if you did not experience suffering, you would remain perpetually an immature, incomplete, not very useful person. Now, does it mean we get, he says consider it pure joy. I don't think he means consider pure joy at the moment it's happening, probably in the big picture, All right, so don't tell that person whose mother died consider it pure joy. Do not tell them that. All right? Another reason that suffering can be a good thing is when it happens in a Christian's life. Because I believe this is one of the strongest apologetics we have for Christianity, is our ability to experience suffering in a way that's entirely different. You know, there's the story in John chapter 9 of the man born blind. And his disciples, not the crowd, it's his disciples ask him, all right, this guy was born blind. Was it because of his sin or his parents' sin? All right? And you know what Jesus said? Neither because of his parents' sin or his sin, but so that God's glory could be shown. All right? And so I would imagine probably there are people in this room today that if God hadn't allowed them to suffer, they would still be lost. Okay? And I would imagine there are people here today that because they saw another person, a Christian, going through extreme suffering and having this fortitude, this ability to worship and believe in God, that perhaps that helped them to become a Christian. Reason number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that I think suffering, that God will allow us to suffer is Colossians 1:24. Colossians 1:24, where Paul says, "Now I rejoice in what I am suffering for you, and I fill up in my flesh what is still lacking in regard to Christ's afflictions for the sake of his body, which is the church." So Paul, by the way, he's in prison when he's writing this. Not a good thing. All right? Not your favorite way to spend a day in prison with the possibility of being executed sometime in the near future. But he's sitting there and he's rejoicing in his suffering. Wow, that's pretty incredible. And he says, I fill up in my flesh what is still lacking in regard to Christ's afflictions. That sounds like almost blasphemy. So Christ's suffering is not sufficient? Well, yeah, actually, it's not sufficient. Because when we experience suffering, then we really come to know Christ. So another reason suffering is good is that as we suffer, we come to know and understand Christ. All right, so we got, how many? We have seven options. Which of these would explain why Job was suffering? Which of these would explain why Job was suffering? All right, now his friends are going to have an opinion. All right, and he's going to have opinion H, which is no reason, basically. There is no reason. All right. Which one's applied to Job?
I say F.
I'd say F, absolutely, right? Because what are we, you know? Well, yeah. Right. We're reading the book of Job, and it's working. It's working right now, okay? I would say F and probably E. Probably E. I believe Job was stronger in the end than he was in the beginning. Okay? So let's read one more little section in Job. All right? And we're going to kind of introduce the rest. So basically, starting in Job chapter 3, now we're going to see responses to suffering. Okay? We're going to see Zophar and Eliphaz and Bildad, and we're going to see responses to suffering. So let's read Job chapter 3. And I don't know how far I'm going to go because it's going to get sort of intense here. Maybe I'll read the whole thing. All right. So, how's Job doing? Let's just ask yourself, how's Job doing right now? From what we've seen so far, Job is doing spiritually. He's doing awesome. He's doing great. I mean, really, considering. So let's read. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. He said, may the day of my birth perish and the night that said a boy is conceived. That day may it turn to darkness. May God above not care about it. May no light shine on it. May gloom and utter darkness claim it once more. May a cloud settle over it. May blackness overwhelm it. That night may thick darkness seize it. May it not be included among the days of the year, nor entered in any of the months. May that night be barren. May no shout of joy be heard in it. May those who curse days curse that day. Those who are ready to rouse Leviathan. May its morning stars become dark. May it wait for daylight in vain and not see the first rays of dawn. For it did not shut the doors of the womb on me to hide trouble from my eyes. Why did I not perish at birth and die as I came from the womb? Why were there knees to receive me and breasts that I might be nursed? For now I would be lying down in peace. I would be asleep and at rest with kings and rulers of the earth, who built themselves places now lying in ruins, with princes who had gold, who filled their houses with silver. Why was I not hidden away in the ground like a stillborn child, like an infant who never saw the light of day? There the wicked cease from turmoil, and there the weary are rest. Captives enjoy their ease, where they no longer hear the slave drivers shout. The small and the great are there, and the slaves are freed from their owners. Why is light given to those in misery, and life to the bitter of soul, to those who long for death that does not come, who search for it more than for hidden treasure, who are filled with gladness and rejoice when they reach the grave? Why is life given to a man whose way is hidden, who God has hedged in? For sighing has become my daily food. My groans pour out like water. What I feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me. I have no peace, no quietness, no rest, but only turmoil. Wow. Job's struggling right now. He says, may the day that I was born be removed from the calendar. Why didn't I die at birth? It would have been better if I'd never been born. What I feared has come upon me. Everything that I feared is exactly what happened. What's Job doing? Well, he's doubting God, that's for sure. He's questioning God. He's discouraged. He's angry. I'd say he's depressed. He's crying out. Does this mean Job is a weak Christian?
No.
Nope. Does it mean that he lacks faith? Nope. I mean, right now he does, I guess. Right now he does, I guess. No. It's called mourning. Job is in mourning. All right? And if this happens in your life, generally because somebody died, most commonly, but other things as well. All right? So I want to do something. It's going to take 5 minutes. Like, how long have I been going? Oh, all right, we'll do it. All right, let's do an exercise. Find somebody next to you and share a significant loss that's happened in your life. Maybe a vision that didn't happen. Maybe a loss of security. A goal that wasn't achieved. Okay. A loss of somebody you needed. Did you have somebody to share with Gabriel? Okay, well, you got a friend right there. All right, let's get back to the lesson. We're going to finish in a minute, and feel free to continue this conversation after church if you like. Okay? Sorry about that. Because if the sermon goes more than 50 minutes, there'll be some suffering going on here. Too long of a sermon, okay. All right? Now, I'm telling you, until maybe certainly within the last 10 years, I would have read Job 3, and I would have said, sinner. Yeah, I would have. I would have said, sinner. How could Job say that? Doesn't he trust God? That's what I would have said. But I'm very confident that's not what God is trying to tell us in Job chapter 3. I'm very confident. How do I know that? Just read the Bible. Look at Psalms. The Psalms can be divided into the royal Psalms and there's all the different categories. But the biggest category by far is laments. A lament is a psalm where you're crying out to God, why are you letting this happen? Almost 2/3 of the Psalms have been categorized as laments. And there's one book in the Bible which is one big lament, and that's all it is. And what's the name of that book?
Lamentations.
Lamentations is just somebody saying, it's terrible. Everything that's happened to us is terrible. You know, it's so bad. The only scripture we ever quote from Lamentations is Lamentations 3, 22 and 23. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. This is the only verse we read. It's because it's the only one that provides encouragement. Like I said, we Americans, we really, forgive me, but we really suck at this. We're really bad at this. So I think we've got a few things to learn, okay? So that's one reason I'm sure that Job is not sinning. Now, is he being tempted to sin here? Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think so. Sure. So, that's a funny place to end this sermon, but that's where we're going to end our sermon, okay? Because next is going to be that short guy and his two friends, giving Job some advice. So a few thoughts then. First of all, God is good. And the evil in the world is not evidence that he's not good, although it seems that way when you first see it, honestly. And the suffering and disease and death, these things seem to be evidence that God is not good, but they are not. But that's the intellectual end, which is not the main thing the book of Job is about. The main thing Job is about is the emotional aspect of dealing with suffering. And so that's kind of what we're delving into here. Experiencing grief, loss, or suffering does not mean that God does not love you. Okay? Can you hold on to God? Can you hold on to a God who seems to not be holding on to you right now? Number two, it's not our job to fix those who are feeling that sense of loss. That's not our job. Our job is to do what these three guys did. All right? Suffering is one of God's greatest gifts. But there's going to come a time in your life where you don't feel that way, okay? And so then end with the question, can you love a God that you cannot control? So that's our sermon for this morning.
There you go.